there is something about every country. Well, every country has something that now we enjoy and love. And one of the things, the ways countries and nations identify themselves and separate them from one another is through music. Every country has an anthem of a sort, national anthem, and you sing it and you proclaim it. And America is very unique because in every football game and in every sporting event, you play a national anthem. I don't know if that's true for every other country, but it is quite true in America. We sing proudly, the nation of the brave. It identifies who we are. It shows us who we are, our identity, our country, our love for it, things that we enjoy in it. The anthem contains the identity and the very blood of the nation. And it is also true for all the other nations as well, all the anthems that I don't understand what they're singing in, obviously. But I know at least Korean ones. It's very long and very broad and very bold, and it speaks of Korean identity. And I'm sure every nation and their anthem is fitting for their country. It is defining for them who they are, for each of those nations. Tonight, what we're going to see is that there are two cities or two nations that's about to be unfolding before us, and those two cities have two different anthems. And the anthems show us what those two cities are pointing toward and what they're like. So this evening, I'd like us to look at those things. Now, last week, we looked at Cain and Abel, which is a very familiar story. It's a familiar narrative that as God has kicked Adam and Eve out of the garden, the paradise, and they're trying to find life outside of the garden, well, we looked at last week that Adam and Eve had two children, and one of the child's name is Cain, the firstborn, and second child's name was Abel. The firstborn was a farmer, just like his father. Secondborn was a shepherd boy. He followed flock and took care of them. And in midst of those distinctions, they come to worship God. And we saw Cain worship God in his ways and Abel worship God in his ways. And that in reality, God should not have accepted either of their worship because they're both sinners cast out from the presence of the Lord, as it says in Genesis chapter 3. They were cast out from the presence of God as they're being cast out from Garden of Eden. And they're bringing worship to God. And should God accept their worship, he should not have, because sinners cannot bring what is right before the Lord. How can they? And yet God graciously accepts Abel's worship. And Cain is upset that God has rejected his own, even though it's rightly so. Sin and sinners cannot please God. And yet God accepted Abel's worship. And what we see in Cain is a man who's wandering in worship, who cannot worship God by virtue of his corruption and his sinful nature. And in his wandering, his wandering in worship has led him into wandering in sin. You find that Cain was upset and Lord comes to him and speaks to him like how God has spoken to Adam when he has sinned. To Adam, God asks, "Where are you?" To Cain, "Why are you upset?" And in there, God expresses, if you do not do what is right, should not this be happening? And he says, the sin is crouching at the door, ready to come and enter in. And he says, you must rule over it. It's almost like an imperative, if we may even say it. You must rule over it. But what we find, Cain is unable to overcome sin. And he falls to the victim of a sin in some ways, but he's not a victim because he's a perpetrator. He does not get overtaken by sin, but he is the sinner that acts in anger and kills his own brother. In one sense, he's not angry at Abel, really. He's angry at God. In his anger, he kills the image of God, the one thing that he could really kill and take a grab and hold of. The one he hates in this picture is not Abel, his brother, but the image that he bears, God himself. So he is a wanderer in worship, and now he has become a wanderer in sin. And after Cain has committed this murder, God comes again and says, "Where is your brother?" And he mocks God and says, "Am I my brother's keeper?" It's the same word that God has used to Adam when he told him, "Keep and guard the garden." And yes, Cain is supposed to be a keeper of his brothers. He's supposed to be a gardener, and he fails to do so. And God brings condemnation upon his sin and casts him out from his presence once again. So here is a man who's wandered in worship, who has now wandered into sin, and now he's wandered away from the presence of the Lord. So chapter 4, verse 16, he says, "Then Cain went away from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden." So we find this wanderer wandering around in the wilderness. We may use that imagery. And he's wandering in those wilderness, and he finds a city. See, he couldn't find the city, so he found a city. Verse 17, he says this, "Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch." And look at the next verse. It says, "When he built a city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son Enoch." Now, this is very important. He says this, "Cain knew his wife, and she conceived and bore Enoch. And when he built the city, he called the name of the city after the name of his son." Now, please understand, in chapter 4, verse 1, when Eve says, "I have begotten a man with the help of the Lord," Moses here does not use the word son nor seed, but a man. But from this verse and following, there is going to be a focus on son. That Cain here had a son now, a seed now, of a man, if we may say. And he's born here. And as soon as this son is born, to this man, he builds a city and names it after his own son. It's interesting. The very pride of this man is he has a son, and rather than bringing God and glory and honor as he ought to, he brings glory to his own son, to himself. It's a city of a man. It's a city of man. Now, this theme is going to perpetuate through the rest of the Genesis, really. It's going to move on. It's going to move the rest of the narratives that there is a city. There is a son of a man. Or should we say, there is son that is belonging to mankind. And you'll see that again in chapter 6, that sons of man, and there's going to be sons of God or daughters of God. There's this huge distinction that is going to develop here. It kind of was in a shadowy form in earlier part of chapter 4, but it becomes more apparent as it's going. It is a kingdom, if we may say, and the king, his name is Cain, and he has built a city. He has made himself a king and secure himself a kingdom. Isn't it ironic? That is quite often how we all operate in our lives. We have little kingdoms, little things that we want to hold on to. It's very nature of man, isn't it? I think so. And in our kingdom, in our house, it can be like a kingdom. And you put in things what you enjoy, and you throw out things you don't enjoy, and you regulate, and you rule, and you are the king of this household. Indeed, that is how God has made us to be, right? If you look at earlier part of how God has created Adam and Eve, Adam was given a kingship, as the Lord God is the king, the creator of heaven and earth. And the heavens is his throne, and earth is his footstool, and he has set Adam to rule, have dominion over the creation. So it is very nature of man to be a ruler. Matter of fact, it's God-given gift, as we are the image bearers of the king himself. But look at the way this king begins to reign his kingdom. Look at and see how this city, the city of man, begins to operate under Cain's rule. verse 18 and following, it talks about how there's a genealogy to this line. So worthy of a king. Every king has a genealogy. And here is his genealogy. Verse 18, to Enoch was born Erod, and Erod fathered Mehujael, and Mehujael fathered Methushael, and Methushael fathered Lamech. And there is this kingly lineage that's given all the way from Cain all the way to Lamech. And verse 19, and Lamech took two wives. In the city of men, there one of their anthem is this, that there is a marriage institution here. Interesting, isn't it? Every nation does. Every nation, every country, every tribe, and every tongue has a form of a marriage one way or another. Now, the marriage can look very different than how we experience it. Even the marriage ceremonies can look different. And the way marriages are formed are different. Their contracts can be very different. Matter of fact, this marriage is between a man and two women. Very contrary the way in which God has instituted in the Garden of Eden. The man is to leave his wife and cling to his wife and become one. There is a sense of this oneness between a man and a woman. There is this institution God has orchestrated. And what Cain is doing, Cain is already, or should I say Lamech, the line of Cain is already twisting which that God has instituted. Remember, as we have discussed in that text, that it was God's gift, that God has given a helper that's suitable for man. And here, Lamech is taking that around, the gift that he has taken. Now he's taking a claim over that gift, and he's become a rule over it. And he says, I am going to do what I want to do, and I'm going to have two if I want it. Or three, maybe, even more. The reality is there is an beginning of an abuse in a marriage. There's a crumbling of a marriage institution. Now, I'm not talking about divorces in those natures. Certainly, that can be drawn from here. But please understand, very beginning of time, the institution of marriage has been crumbling in mankind. It's very important for us to recognize and understand that. That which God has made one, let no man cut asunder, it can be used in this fashion as well. What God has ordained for between a man and a woman, between two to become one, here we have three becoming one. It's a perversion, not merely sexual perversion, but it is a destruction of that which was sacred. It is the marriage that God has ordained. That Cain, in his kingship, in his throne, in the city of man, they're already throwing out that which God has instituted. You see? It's a city that wants to be his own ruler, his own king. Not only that, you will see, and continue on, there's a development in this city. Verse following on, verse 19, the name of the one was Adah, and the name of the other is Zillah. Now they have four children. Three of the children are male, and one of the child is a woman. And he tells us about these three children, three men. And he tells them, one of them, Jubal, is the one who dwelt in tents and livestock. And his brother was, And Jubal, well, his brother is the one who made music, play lyre and pipe. And Zillah is the one. And Zillah bore Tubal Cain, who is a blacksmith of a sort, a man who is able to make instruments and so on. And there is a development, or should we say, civilization. Now, we normally say this is a common grace. Most commentators will say this is a common grace at its work. And indeed, that is very true, that these men are developing things. There is music, there is tents and food and livestock and tools that can help to build a civilization, or should I say build a city. You couldn't build a city without tools. You're not going to you know, carry everything by your hands, you're going to start to have livestock pulling and building and molding and putting the walls around to protect it, to build it and make it stronger and firmer and to develop and have food. And when you have those things, you will have music talking about what we have done this day and what we have accomplished and celebrating the things that they have accomplished. It is a development of civilization. Now, civilization, nothing's wrong with civilization, right? I mean, we reap the benefits of civilization we have received. It's not like we came out one day and says, as Christians, we're going to have civilization. That's not how it happened, right? Much of our civilization is stemmed from actually a secular background, hasn't it? It's true. How we understand geometry is mostly from Greeks, and logic from Greeks. In so many ways, even in China and other civilizations we study, we recognize most of them were not from a Christian, God-honoring backgrounds. It developed as a culture, and it is rooted in the very city of man. It's hard to swallow sometimes because we think every good gift comes from the Lord. It's very true, and we think every good gift should be Christian, and yet it's not quite so. Because please do recognize civilization can be good for us, but also it can be a great evil. Right? Music can be a tool to draw us near to God and worship Him and make us consider things that are important and good and wonderful. And yet music can be used to bring about bad and evil things. I mean, there's some music I hear that I don't even know why they sing about these things. Music is a way in which, quite often in modern times, and it has always been the case, about boasting of their achievements. You know? When I'm driving around a lot of students, they always want to play music. They think my music is boring. So I just don't hear any music, you know? Can we listen to this? I'm like, no. I don't know what that is. I don't want to listen to it. Please stop. But sometimes I hear them listening, I hear them rapping, I hear them singing, I hear them enjoying this music, and I listen to those lyrics, and they are something I don't even know. How can you even listen to these things? Not just talking about the sounds. Sometimes they sound great. They're fun to listen to, and yet when you actually sit down and read the lyrics, oh my goodness, I can't even put it in my words. Talking about sex, talking about money, talking about pride, talking about drugs, talking about life. And even if it's not as bad as those things, it quite often it's about the flesh and the desires of the flesh, yearnings of man. And quite often, not all technology is good for us. It is true that our lives has been advanced and we enjoy so much, don't we? We have air conditioning in Florida. Praise the Lord. And we have plowers to plow the snow up there for those of us who are from up there. But the fact of the matter is, it is those technology that kills thousands and millions by droves today. There's more weapons of destruction than we can even consider and think about. More ways to bring harm to one another. Doesn't have to be guns or weapons. It can be drugs that's supposed to bring us some help and aid in our pain and anguish and healing and cure. And yet those are the very things that are destroying families and lives. It is, matter of fact, the technology that we so blindly and blindly accept and appreciate quite often. In the city of man, issue is not the technology, but issue is that we are sinners wandering from the presence of God. And any good we can have a hold of, we turn it and twist it, and we make idols and destructive things out of it to bring about human ends and human means to do so. So first thing in the city of man, first anthem is this marriage union that God has ordained has been twisted and grabbed and thrown out the window. Man is going to institute their own marriage system. And second thing is the technology and all the things and advancement and civilization has brought about. And in this city, it is going to advance not God's end, but man's end. And third characteristic, the third anthem of this city, and I think this is what is more important than anything else, is in verse 23 and following. Lamech said to his wives, Adah and Zillah, hear my voice, you wives of Lamech, listen to what I have to say. He says, I have killed a man for wounding me, a young man for striking me. And Cain's revenge is sevenfold. Lamech's revenge is 77-fold. Now here is this king. He's looking back to the first king of this city. This is the sixth king. And he's looking at the very first king's story and his narrative. He knows about it. He heard about it. He recognizes his kingship. And he says this, what God has brought curse upon him as a king who is bringing justice upon Cain for killing his brother. Here this king declares, I am my own king. I'll bring my own justice. And his justice looks like this. He is going to kill for someone wounding him. You see, it is the most selfish and self-absorbed system of justice. I don't know if I can even consider a justice. And yet it is a system of justice here. He's declaring, I am going to do what I want to do. I'm going to bring revenge for those who harm me tenfold, twentyfold if I need to. It is not about justice, but it is about myself doing what I want to do as I am my own judge. It is to throw away all the things of God and his system of rule and to bring about man's system, the city of man. It is about man and nothing else. In other words, the anthem in the city of man is a man and the glory to the man, to the highest. See what really has happened? See, Cain has wandered away from worship. He began to wander in sin. And as he is in sin, he is cast out from the presence of the Lord. As he's being cast out into the east of Eden, point of no turning back, into a wandering land. And he's now wandering around and trying to build a city. And he builds a city. He's looking for a city. And then he says, you know what? I'm going to build my own city. And this city will be a city of no God. Get away with marriage. And all the blessings that God has given. Get away with justice. It is a city that a man does whatever seems right in his own eyes. Who is their God? Their God is man himself. It is an atheist city. Not only an atheist city, it is a man-worshipping city. See, if you're to enter into this city, what you will see is a statue, a huge one, a big one, a great one, covered in gold. And he is going to stand and he is going to be the man. And everyone will bow to this man and worship man. The anthem of this city is to the glory of man. And that is how this narrative should have ended. I personally think so. That this should have been how man has... should have been the projection of man's kind's lives. This should have been how man would have walked. And yet, there is two verses at the end of this chapter that says otherwise. He says this, and Adam knew his wife again, and she bore a son. And she, please recognize it's a feminine verb here, she called his name Seth. For she said, God has appointed for me, or set upon here for me, another offspring instead of Abel, for Cain killed him. This narrative here, this narrative of the city of man and its anthem as glory to man, to its highest, all of a sudden has a great interruption here. And then comes this two verses that kind of twists and turns away from that and takes a scene to completely another place. And you see this great city whose a builder and maker is man. And then it turns to this little place here where Adam and Eve are. And And then there is a son, a child is born. And I want us to think about this. Here, Eve is claiming something. She says, I've received a son, and his name is not going to be Seth, because Abel died and Cain killed him. There's a sense of a mother who is sorrowing over death of his two sons, really. That she's mentioning all three of her children. And it's as I'm not a mother, but imagine the anguish of her heart as she is declaring this. But we have a hope in this child, Seth. And for a minute second here, she is expressing something more than just a little saying. I think she's expressing faith. She's expressing, here is a son, different kind of son. Not son that Lamech has brought forth and named the city after him, but here is another son, a son of hope. One that maybe turned this around, this injustice, this brokenness. Maybe there is a son who will bring and turn this around. And he says, I have received this son. The Lord has appointed this one. The Lord has, the Hebrew word is, set him here, placed him here. This son. And she's expressing a twinkle of faith in the promise that God has given him in Genesis chapter 3 about the seed of a woman who will crush the head of the serpent. Please recognize this. The seed of the serpent here is Cain and his lineage. Then who is the seed of the woman? Is this little baby boy who's been born. And this boy grows up, he says in verse 26, and then this boy also has a son. To Seth also a son is born. And he called name Enosh. And at that time, people began to call upon the name of the Lord. So there are two cities. Now, it doesn't use the word city here. It's probably a very tiny little thing. A little family. There is no lineage that's given. Actually, chapter 5 starts to unpack this farther. But it is a city. Not like a city of men. But it is another city. It is the city of God. And what is its anthem? Its anthem is this: calling upon the name of the Lord. You see, where worship was thrown out the window, sin is rampant. And God's presence can no longer dwell with men, for it's filled with violence and injustice. And corruption and destruction. But there is this little, in this little tiny place here, it cannot even be called a city, but there is a sense of a city coming forth. It is the city of God. This city is not going to be built by men. It's not going to be built by hands of men. It's not going to be civilization and power and all those things that men look forward to. But this is a city. It has only one anthem and one song. It is in the name of the Lord. It is in the name of the Lord. It is in the name of the Lord. This is the city where you come and call upon the name of the Lord. This is a city where you come and you do not look to left, to the right, and tell men what to do and how to do. Or you're telling men, this is how I'm going to live and this is how I'm going to do. No, this is a place where you call upon the Lord and say, Lord, you are the King. You are the Lord. And unto you we submit ourselves. This is that city. A completely different city than the city of man. It is the city of God. It's God's work. God is beginning to unfold his promises in Genesis chapter 3. And he says, there is a son. See, this is a seed of a woman beginning to unfold. But you know what happened to both of these cities? In the next couple chapters, both of these cities will be destroyed in the Noah's flood. You see, even though there is a city of God, we are unable to enter into that city. Even though God has placed a city, you and I can never find it and never claim to it because we're cast out from the presence of the Lord. And only way we're able to enter into the presence of the Lord and enter into this city. This is not an earthly city that's built by hands of men, but it is a heavenly city, heavenly glory. And in this glorious city, only ones who are able to enter in are the ones that have come down from that place and opened the gate for us to enter in. Only way for any man to enter into this city, which from which we have been cast out from which we have forfeited an entrance into, is the one who come and he himself builds this city. The promised seed of a woman. And this promised seed is the only one by whom we can enter into this city of God. It's because this seed came down into the wilderness and was killed by his own brethren. And he hung upon that tree as the cursed one, even though we are the one who deserve to be cursed. And the judgment of God was fall upon him. He says, God crushed him and he pleased Yahweh. And the Lord has brought destruction on this city of, on this son of the woman. So that through his death, he satisfied the wrath of God that's been set before you and I. It is only this woman, this seed of woman, only by him that we can be saved. You know why? Because the name he proclaimed throughout his time on earth was simply this. He proclaimed the name of the Lord. He called upon the name of the Lord as an example, not only as an example, as a truly man, he claimed, proclaimed and called upon the name of the Lord and proclaimed his name and says, now is the time. The time has fulfilled. Believe and be saved. So what you will see, that from the very genesis of the fall, all the way to Revelation, is this city coming to realization. And the one who brings forth this city is Jesus Christ and him alone. There is no other city. There is no other name by which we can enter into this city. Why is this significant for all of us? Because so often we get confused. Civilization is not civility, wealth, society. That is not what is truly good. I think quite often, as we live in an affluent country and we enjoy the civility of being able to get in a line, having a traffic light, you know, those civility, those good social things are great and they're helpful. They prevent accidents, even though accidents still happen. Having ambulance and hospitals and school systems and protections and government, all those things that functions really well. And there is a sense of check and balance in our nation. And all those things we take for granted, and those are great things. It's hard to find a nation like America. Just go south. But here's the thing. That is not Christian. It's still a city of men. There's no hope in America. In that sense, America is not heaven. There is no hope on earth. In that sense, that only hope is the city of God which Christ has set himself. So Abraham, even though he lived and walked amongst men, and he brought about justice wherever he went, he brought about blessings wherever he walked, and yet he was looking for a city whose builder and maker is God, and he lived as a wanderer with no hope on earth, but hope in heaven. And my brothers and sisters, we have to make that a sure thing. And we have to make that a great proclamation. Because I think that one of the hardest mission fields in the world is not Iran. It's the United States of America. That we're so happy in the city of men, we have no desire to enter into the city of God. But the grace of God is set before you and I, that Christ has conquered this city of men, and he's calling all to come to the city of God, where true life is, where true joy is. So call to you this evening is this: if you have not put your trust and looking forward to this city of God, the call here is to believe and turn, put your trust and faith in the city builder whose name is Christ, and turn away from the city of men. And for those of us who have believed and put our trust upon him, let us look to heaven. Let us not look to here. Let us not look to all the temporary enjoyments we have on this side, but strive to enter in great contentment, certainly, but strive to enter into this heavenly rest. Let us pray.